building over time. It's become a very popular thing. And the last First Friday at the beginning of June was a huge success. We had people milling about smartly all over downtown. And I just hate anything, you know, any kind of a kibosh thrown on that. I'm not sure whose responsibility it is to.
It's not the city's responsibility. It is the responsibility of whoever. It really would be, the last person to apply for it was, she's up north now.
Sherry Richter.
And she arranged for the alcohol event providers, which was Blue Goose was the last one. And seems to provide for all of that. That is not in this year, did not come in for this month. I understand that they will be applying and will probably approve the next 3 months.
And maybe we can, when they come, we make a recommendation that you may want to.
They do multiple. Do it one quarter at a time.
It also gets into who pays for it. We paid for it last time. So we paid the police.
How much is that?
$75 per officer, two officers. So we paid $150.
So we have to talk about if you do multiple applications, do you get a discount?
Well, the officer cost is the officer cost.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's what costs us to pay the officer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no, it's going to cost me $75 an hour an officer, no matter what.
Maybe we should look at a little bit of pro bono work.
Well, what did the armbands go for? What does that go towards? The armbands, the $3 armbands?
That pays for that, right?
That'll pay for administration time we put in, places for the armbands, public works, bringing out whatever we need to do. With regard to that, whatever cleanup costs we have and everything else, there are other costs besides just the officers.
Yeah.
And this is the officers on their time. They're not on our time. They are on their time. It's $25 an hour. There still are police officers that cover, they get all their benefits, they get all the workers' compensation from us when they do this. But they are strictly in on an overtime basis on that $25 an hour. And that's been like this for quite some time. That's the number, and we reviewed that a couple times. It's just the number. That's what it costs us to put an officer out there.
We have a citizen at the.
Yeah.
I apologize for bringing up this little sidebar. Please move forward.
How you doing, Mr. Canning?
I'm Canning, 410 Point Peter Place.
Okay.
Two items as a result of some of the discussions. One, I find it very positive. Whether I read it correctly or not, it appears to me that individual council members have done some research and looked into recyclable. Ask questions on their own. I do, as you know, as I sent you all an email, that I also did some research and come to find out that we're paying for material by weight that's not recyclable. It needs to be made aware to the public that things like garden hoses, which are heavy enough, none of that gets recycled. And styrofoam, which isn't very heavy, but it also doesn't get styrofoam. We could probably make this. I know we could make this. There's other odds and ends, car parts and things like that that may or may not get recycled, or depends on whether or not it's clogged up the machine, et cetera. So I know this, when the subject came up earlier, part of your discussion was the public awareness to make sure they understood why rates are going up, to feed that information into the system. But also, they need to know, they need to be reminded what the do's and don'ts are. I'm sure that a lot of people just don't have the time to go to the Republic website and the events website and the city website and figure out, and even when you do go to those three websites, you'll find conflicts. One website, they'll say they do one thing, and the other one said they don't do that thing. So, this, not that it's all in itself, those conflicts are that significant, but the point is that we are truly paying, we what is it, $90?
$90 a ton.
For our materials, it can't be recycled. We need to pull, make sure people don't put that in a recycle bin, because I'm sure you've all experienced the same thing. What goes in that blue box goes in the garbage can. If it's in the blue box, it goes in the garbage can, so.
That's part of the grade increase, and that's really, we pay that to advance disposal, and that's why the rate went up $0.75. Thank you, reason for that, that rate increase was at $90 a ton. But that's included in what we pay advance disposal.
I understand, but we pay, well, best I understand, and I'm sure Mr. Holman and you all looked into it.
What you're saying is still right, Tom, not.
Yeah, we're paying for it by weight on what advance disposal picks up. They dump it with the public, okay? And of that 100 pounds, 80 pounds that they recycle and 20 they don't, so we're still paying for that. So I think we need to do something about being smarter about that. The other item that came up, and as you know, a subject that I've had interest in for some time, is the weed street. I am strictly on a personal basis, I am convinced that weed street can turn into a revenue stream if we get serious about developing that opportunity. Now, I understand that you're stretched thin, not only on dollars, but on people. I'm also convinced that there is enough people in our community that I've already talked to that see the value of generating a revenue stream there, taking it and turning some part of the property to help pay for some of the things you're interested in, such as a oversight location, a bicycle route location, et cetera, and even a stand location, okay, for training. All of those things are good, but they all either require grants, usually matching, and or taxpayer dollars. Yeah. So what I'm offering you, I'd like you to seriously consider, and I think my history with you proves that I do follow through, and that is that I'm perfectly willing to put together, with your approval, a group of knowledgeable citizens that have that interest to pursue that subject and come up with a plan to generate revenue through that property. So if you think about it, can you give us a green light? I mean, we're not looking for a blank check. We're just looking for the opportunity to be proactive and augment your existing teams. Now, we're not having, this isn't a separate and distinct path to what you're looking for. I know Discovery Center is the operative word, is the buzzword, but this is an extension of the Discovery Center. It's not only an opportunity to gain revenue, but it's also an opportunity for showing talent at the student level and at the tourist level. So I think there's a lot of opportunity, and my fear is that this opportunity, there's only going to be one taker in Georgia in the near future that's going to develop. What I'm saying is, right now, the Marine Extension Service is the only organization in the state of Georgia that offers oyster spat and development, and they sell it to oyster hatcheries.
They sell it.
Well, they've grown past that.
Okay.
But the point is that within our media future, if there is a commercial organization interested in gaining access to our property, generating some revenue for the city, having access to the right water, it's probably not going to be a handful of them. Probably not going to be one. And I've heard through contact with people that you and I both know,
right,
that there is other interest out there for this development. So we need to get front line.
Well,
anyway,
follow up on it. You know, we have talked to people in Florida. We're looking to capture readings out there, it's wind, temperature, and other things for about a year we provided them, and the individual hadn't got back to us, and that's one of the things that led us to the conclusion that we're getting running up against a couple brick walls.
And that's my offer.
Yeah, it's just, we want to chat with you about that.
We will put together a team of people, one team may be three or four, but, you know, enthusiastic, people with some credentials, put together an aggressive plan to reach out there and work with the Marine Extension Service as well as commercial organizations, whether they be in the Carolinas or they be in Georgia, I mean, Florida, we don't have any equal organizations in Georgia right now. So, I'm not trying to sell you a business plan right now, I'm trying to make you an offer.
Yeah.
You hit a note with me when you said that you were being stretched too thin. Well, we can help fill that gap.
All right.
If you give us the opportunity.
All right.
If we decide to go that way, what I'd like to see would be in advance some criteria of what this would look like Jim did on the initial group did on the waterfront. I mean, what would, you know, certain things that you would only be satisfied if they...
Ellen, there's going to need to be a little give and take. You're going to have to tell us what your expectation is, what your criteria is, and then we will be able to put a plan that meets those expectations and criteria. If we have something that goes beyond that, we could add that. But there needs to be a starting place rather than just, you know, a grandiose
but
plan.
I'm guessing you have a starting place in your head, is what I'm saying.
I do, but it needs to be defined by your limitations.
What we've seen, Lance, up in Skidaway, we've gone and visited the hatchery up there, and we know what a smaller size hatchery should look like.
No, but if you're going to get a group of people together to do brainstorming and look at a way to generate revenue, there should be certain things on the table and
sure,
kind of why,
sure,
and not limit yourself too much in your idea sharing, but you would want a certain parameters. You wouldn't want something that would be an eyesore or, you know, that would contaminate anything or would have a negative impact on the long run for that piece of property. You know, that type of thing is what I'm talking about. So you wouldn't want to limit the brainstorming, but you would want some parameters.
And when we get it, if this becomes the first thing, we've got to lay out what our vision is for the Discovery Center, because if you put this there, it's got to work with the Discovery Center. So this
we need to find a piece of real estate would not interfere with your end objectives.
Right.
Okay, a portion of that, and we've already gone through this to a certain degree. There's adequate amount of property. And matter of fact, it needs to be a scalable plan, because I envision that the first stage will be a relatively small operation until it's going to be a commercial organization that's going to invest their dollars in it, not the city. That's another part of the plan. This event needs not to be a taxpayer burden. So,
Elaine, were you in saying that we should consider more than just the oysters?
Oh, well, I mean, if you're going to open it up to ideas on how to generate revenue, yes, you should open it up to more than just oysters.
And that certainly could be a part of the conversation, but we focused in on this idea because of the resources available at that location. What's unique about that area? You know, it's existing conditions, the amount of free property, the access to the river, above the pipe, and things like that. Now, if there's another revenue stream opportunity separate and distinct from that, then absolutely bring that in as well. But to be honest with you, at this moment, I don't know anything unique about that piece of property that couldn't serve these other options, revenue options. Just this is that we're just trying to capitalize on the unique conditions of that property and the fact that just for the sake of discussion, let's just say half of the property was dedicated to complete Discovery Center, the water side of it, right? Vice versa, so the end, this, that, and the other. Because once you start going that route, you've got regular maintenance, you know, yard, grass cutting and fence maintaining, and all these other things that need to be done. It would be sure nice that before you started down that path, if you had a small revenue stream or some agreement with that commercial operation to do some of those things. So I leave that with you. I mean, you know how to, you got my number.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you, thanks, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Mayor Morrissey, I just want to let you know where the office is at. I sent out an email.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Lanley Park, I'm one of the owners of the Blue Goose at 116 Osborne. And I just had a question for Mr. Gannon and anyone else. You mentioned earlier about the Smith property and the cooperation with the CDP. And the reference to the fact that we're all engaged with the same goal and vision for the property. Could you just kind of reiterate where we are with the current vision for that property?
This has been going on a while, unfortunately, as you know. But the Gateway Committee initially set out 5 objectives for that piece of property. Those objectives are public access along the seawall, which we're working on, as you saw now, pathway and whatever, especially to the pier. Because the pier is going to expand. We're going to make that bigger. It's going to be a much bigger venue for transient boats that come in and out of St. Mary's off Intercoastal Waterway. One, public access. Two, whatever it put in there, it's got to have historical compatibility. Three, it's got to be compatible with the environment. I mean, you're sitting right there on the marsh and the water and everything. The other two are very important. One, it's got to be a moneymaker, not only for the developer, but also for the city. It's got to make sense from an economic standpoint. And lastly, it's got to be a draw. Bring people into downtown and stay there if we can. The whole vision for the Gateway is it's a catalyst for our downtown. If we get the right development in there, and that development has pretty well been conceptualized as a hotel, restaurant, bar type of a facility, very nice, upscale, then that's going to draw people in there that's going to stay, and also it's going to galvanize other development, especially along Stable Alley. We think Stable Alley has got a lot of potential for the future in the development. Because St. Mary Street itself doesn't have a lot of extra space for businesses and whatever. You need more shops. You need more little restaurants. You need more of these things to keep people interested and want to come into downtown. And that's where we're at. We're looking to find that developer that has the same vision as we set out.
And I think what you alluded to is having a place where people can sleep so that they stay, so that they get off the boat from Cumberland and have a place to go and shower and freshen up and go out to eat and go back to shop and stay right here in this area.
Right. And that's not taken away from our bed and breakfast. Incidentally, Mary is on our committee. And fully committed to this thing, so.
More people is more people,
absolutely. And it's good for everybody. It's good for every business that we have been in.
Is the development of the marina area separate than the development of the land area? Is that something that's presented?
That's going to be something the city spearheads. And we already have, thanks to our city manager, engineering concept for 3 phases. And I should let John talk about it a little bit, because it is exciting how many boat slips and boat places that we're going to add there over a period of time. But we've got the design, we've got the concept, we permitted it, or almost permitted it, and we expect that we'll be able to go for a grant on that, which we're very hopeful for, at least for phase one. But that will remain to the public, just like the walkway for me and the public's venue.
Well, part of the name is Intercoastal Gateway. Mm-hmm. That harkened back to how we conceived of the value of the property and the concept. And I think the 40-plus slips that are on there, and it's a mixture of small, medium, and large opportunities for boaters to come in. Will help define and maybe make this property more attractive than it was in the past. Now, we're not going to build those 40 slips tomorrow. It's pretty expensive. So now we're in the process of using the skills of the staff to figure out how we're going to get there.
So the permitting process, I mean, I've never attempted that myself, can be a complicated and drawn-out process. So where are you with that process?
Mr. Holland, would you like to take that?
Sure. I'll be happy to. The permit has been submitted to the Department of Natural Resources, State of Georgia, and to the Army Corps of Engineers, so it's on a parallel course. The DNR, Department of Natural Resources, has gotten back to us, requested a clarification of some information, some having to do with deeds, some other things, usually clearing up all things to make sure everything matches up. And it is going out for a, should be a public hearing sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks. They should be sending that notice out. The Army Corps will follow that procedure. If DNR approves, then the Army Corps will only deal with whether or not it's a general permit or specific permit. If it's a specific permit, we know that takes a longer period of time to control under general permit. General permit means it's a nationwide general permit and no problems, 30 days you normally get your permit. Specific or individual permit means that no, they believe that this should be reviewed in much greater detail, that it does not fit under the national general permit, so therefore you're looking at 4 month at least period to 6 month period. We've had to deal with both of them. This should be a DP. But I never guessed what the Army Corps of Engineers is going to do. They do try to work with us, and they work hand-in-hand with the DNR. So the DNR believes that it will be a general permit, so that's how we are moving forward with it. But the permits have all been submitted. Now we are beginning our process of working on what's called a building infrastructure grant, which we will have to get submitted by somewhere around mid-August. Of this year for the state to review, and mid-September for the federal review process. DNR is very supportive. They're working with us. We are working with a grant administrator. We are asking for, I think it'll be around $500,000 in grants for this. The city needs to match it with 46% in cash. So we're in the process right now. If you'd like to, I believe we have it on out on the website, the design, what we're doing. It's a three-phase voting process, a three-phase process. The first 800 or 900,000 is to do phase one. Each one of those phases is $800,000 to $900,000. It's very expensive doing marine work, I'm sure you're aware of that. But as we move through each phase, we'll be able to provide greater and greater services. So
the gateway always visualized. That's why it's called the intracoastal gateway. Mm-hmm. And that's our water. That's, you know, we want to attract boats off the intracoastal or over from Fernandina or wherever, and have a public place where they can dock for a couple of days if they're coming down the intracoastal or going back to the intracoastal, and relax and take it easy. Incidentally, this scheme for this phases of these, this enlargement of the piers and the boat slips, is going to be very interesting to developers. I'm sure they're going to really appreciate the video or the study that's going on in this. And take a look at it. It's pretty good.
I have one more comment.
Yes.
Unrelated. Backtracking a little bit. Going back to the first Friday alcohol permitting process, I think that this is a good opportunity, maybe not today, but in noting that there were some people that had different thoughts on it, to kind of explore the different aspects of that process and how can we streamline that to help our businesses have a very easy, concise way to keep this event growing, so that I don't really know exactly what happened, but when somebody happens to be out of town 3 weeks ahead of time, or you know that they're, that this process is, that that person is not the weakest link, that we build a robust process. And I would just make the comment that any permit that is granted certainly would have the ability to be revoked if there were any problems. So,
thank you for the questions. Very much.
Okay, who's next? necessary part of the answer. I'm still learning why one of two Sueys. The only thing I forgot to mention is, this Friday is Star Dance in the park.
Saturday.
Saturday.
Saturday, yeah. Saturday night, Star Dance in the park. What I forgot.
Pure book. Mr. Olman, Jimmy, I'm jumping in line here. Do you want to talk about the flood ramps for just a second? Because I think it's been so long and so painful and so iterative. And also, and we'll do the education process about the here, what you do with them, how you look at them. Because I see there's a couple of, that must have been some challenges by a few of the homeowners.
Well, I think those were low bars and low bar letters of form revision and letter of map amendment. There are two different ways to change the flood maps in between the times, and it's usually every 10 years Army Corps changes these, sometimes 15, you never know. The ones listed on that sheet that I emailed out to everybody on the letter from the Army Corps are ones that they have on record. So those LOMARs and LOFARs have been included in the new maps. They take effect December 21st of this year. So what they've done is the LOMAR and LOFARs will disappear because...
You might want to tell people what LOMAR...
Yeah, letter of map amendment, letter of planning form revision, which means that you got a letter of revision, they didn't amend the map. Army Corps does not like amending a map unless it's a huge area.
I'm not sure what Tom's looking
at. No, he's looking at what I emailed out to council earlier, which is the Army Corps of Engineers. We received a letter from them. Matter of fact, certified return receipt to the mayor. And what they were advising us is the public period is closed for comment on the flood map. It started. It ended actually September 21st, 2016. I'm not sure how they came up with that date. That was a year ago, but it did end then. They reviewed all the information that they had, and there were no appeals to anything within the city of St. Mary's for the new flood maps that will be coming out. And they have also advised us that the date now for adoption, which was supposed to be in July, is now December 21st, 2017. These flood maps determine whether or not you are or not in a flood zone. I can tell you that after review by Jeff Adam, our community development staff, our engineers, that more properties are coming out of the flood zone and flood map area than are being put into the flood map. But I strongly recommend that anyone that has not seen these new maps, please stop in my community development office. We will bring your property up. We can show you what it says you are on the current map and what your, where you'll be located or what they're saying your flood elevation is on the revised map. We've been doing this, we've had residents come in and ask us to do this. We're more than happy to do this for them. I know a number of properties will be coming out of the flood zone. We do not recommend you do away with flood insurance, but it could reduce your flood insurance by half. That is a big number for any of us that carry flood insurance. If you're paying $900, you could get down to $450. If this shows that you are out of the flood zone, the LOMARs and LOFARs, I know I talk about them when they're in my head. I usually follow them pretty closely. They're not saying they were appeals. They're ones that were on record, and they're saying that they are now part of the map. So they come off the record because they're already included in the
new map there is, I mean, this just came out today. I just emailed it out to everybody today and put it into my manager's report. You probably, I didn't get it out this afternoon. Try reading it, it takes a little while to work your way through this thing.
Well, I just thought, you know, it's a continuing story. It can affect people's wallets.
Absolutely, and that's why we say, come in to my community development office, we will check your property, and we can show you what your elevation is on the old map, what the elevation is on the new map. And if you come out of the flood zone, you will see a significant savings. Some people will be going in the flood zone, much fewer than are coming out of it. But we have asked, I think, numerous times for people to come in, look at the maps. The maps are on our website if you want to look at them. You can go into it and look it up yourself, or come in and see us, and we'll look it up for you. We're more than happy to do that.
This has been about a 3-year process.
Yeah, these rates won't be effective until next year, I believe.
No, the rate, once the map becomes effective on December 21st, December 22nd, go ahead and vote your insurance company.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the way the impact occurs. If you don't call your insurance company, you know, basically. December 22nd, I'm calling USAA Flood Insurance. Trust me, I'm getting on the phone because my elevation did change. I believe a number of people around with it have changed. Some of the elevations downtown, I know, have changed. Some have come out of the flood zone. Some have gone into the flood zone. But all of that you have to look at on each individual parcel.
John, you say floodplain, but what really happened was they did the study. They did a lot of the studies, wave actions, all that, to figure out the 100-year floodplain, 500-year floodplain. And if you move from the 100-year to the 500-year floodplain, that's when your insurance is going to be reduced.
So, well, really, it's
the elevation of the house is what the elevation of the house is.
Yeah, it's the elevation of the ground.
Yeah.
But the LIDAR data they have now is much better than the LIDAR data that they had 15 years ago when these maps were done. So that's why these are so much more detailed when I get into them. If you think about the way technology advanced, and LIDAR just means that when they look at it from space and they look at it, and they can get you an inch or millimeter. But that is in my next manager's report as well, so if anybody wants to, they can just pull it up. But it really just says it becomes effective December 21st, no appeals will be accepted at this point. They are through the public process period. I'm not really too sure why it got moved to December 21st. It really doesn't explain that, but I'm sure there's a federal regulation that says it's got to be posted in the Federal Register at least 2 or 3 times, and then it comes out.
And the one cautionary tale that every citizen should take and keep in mind is that if you're not in a flood zone or your elevation is such that you're not required to have flood insurance,
still
do not live in St. Mary's without flood insurance. You will find yourself in a bind. It has happened in many places. Your homeowner's insurance does not pay for flood damage, period. End of story. We're flat. Unless you live on top of Chris Gilman Stadium, then airport would suggest that you get flood insurance.
You're right. You're right. It pays that flood insurance here, especially if you speak to anybody that got hit by Hurricane Matthew, because we did not reach the damage threshold for personal property, for household property. We did for public property, but not for personal private.
Speaking of that, I think we got the last of the payments.
We have received all the reimbursements from FEMA that we were entitled to. Jeff and staff worked day and night to make sure that everything came
in. Did we do a final compilation and bring it up?
No, I can bring that up.
I think it would be a good story to say, we had Matthew, this is what we did, and
this is what
those with the actions, like the 3 pile scenarios that went over there on Douglas Drive, and the way we applied for the money that we maxed out on it, just everything we could get, and how much. I think the public would like to know that.
I'll be happy to put it in either the next meeting or meeting following. I'm trying to remember
when that happened. When's the process? Yeah. text. Yes, ma'am.
Donna Aspel, I'm the other co-owner of the Blue Goose. A suggestion, I know that we have these three phases that are going to go through, I said on the downtown visioning committee. Let's do something temporary before then. Let's put out something temporary downtown that closes off the street that will be closed off when the big plan goes through. And let's see how it works. Let's do something that people can actually see that's happening. I mean, the gateway's been going on for a long time and it's going to go on for a long time. All of these projects that are going to go on, they're grants, they're years and years out. All the towns are doing temporary things. They don't get taken down every night, they're there for the season, they're there for a year. But there are things that we could do downtown that when you get off the ferry, it makes you want to stay. And let's at least think about it and look at it and, you know, I know that, you know, times are slim and but temporary, you get a lot, it's kind of like doing First Friday, you get a lot of people interested, but you also see things that do and don't work. We see that alcoholic people walking around last month really wasn't a big deal. Let's see what happens when you move traffic one way or another. Downtown Macon is a wonderful example of what you can do on a temporary basis. Look at what they did. I mean, they put in, you know, all sorts of temporary barriers. They left them for a weekend, it was great. And they put them back down there for 3 months, it was great. And now they've got temporary things. They're going to stay down there until they get every little kink, and then they'll put their permanent things in. So let's look at doing something downtown that revitalizes it, makes it look better. When we're going into the fall, I think it's now it's time to think about it.
Well, keep in mind that our reconstruction, what's it called, Shrimp, isn't that far in the future. March, we expect to be under construction sometime in the spring. And that's a big thing. That's a big improvement.
Okay, with all due respect,
you don't like
when that. We purchased the building down here, they were putting the shovel in the dirt at the gateway, and it was a go. That's what we were told when we purchased the building. So I truly am trying to be respectful, but it's time to do something. We sat in a downtown visioning for 6 months, and again, they're like low-hanging fruit. Do something. Don't wait for these big things to happen. Do something. So, you know, it's not that I don't like the project. I mean, I think it's a great project, but I'm just saying it's way out there. Let's do something that affects the economy now. Because, I mean, I understand that you think that, I understand that you've said several times that the gateway is the catalyst for economic development downtown. Well, quite frankly, I'm tired of paying the power bill until the catalyst kicks in.
What are your suggestions?
I mean, they drew up that. We had things drawn up with the downtown visioning of things that were temporary that we could, you know, that we could look to and, you know, making them more permanent. There were things that were permanent, but there were also vignettes and there were sailboats and there were things that were interesting that could be used. I mean, you can paint a street and change it, but really go to Macon and look. It's all online. It's bikewalkmacon.com. And it shows you just what they've done over less than a year. And it's truly changed the face of their downtown.
What's it called again?
Bike Walk Macon.
Bike Walk Macon?
Yes, I think bikewalkmacon.com.
All one word.
Yeah, I mean, that's the WWW.
I have to ask that question.
That's okay. All one case.
Tom Canning, 410 Point View Place, Phase 2. Since you were talking about downtown development and some of the properties down there, that the artist's conceptions of what could be done down there, a lot of them were pretty young or inventive or interesting. Not the least being a little store for local downtown people and voters to use to get milk and bread and things like that. I don't want to get bogged down into that one, but I do want to ask a question regarding the Georgia Power building that's on the corner. Obviously a prime piece of real estate directly across from the river, directly across. Is there any plan that you can share with us? Is there any negotiations going on? How is that going to be used and developed in developing all of this with the downtown concept? The last thing you need is another office building down there. So, anyway.
Well, I do know that it's been purchased privately, and the either some of the council people or the city manager may have more detail about what the owners are planning. I know it's been done, and it's not, there will be an office in, but I think there's two other.
There'll be, there'll be an office for the real estate firm, and that is my understanding. I have not seen the plans, but there will also be a small novelty area coffee shop, kind of where the drive-through is and everything for people to go in, get a cup of coffee, get a croissant, or a donut, whatever case may be, and maybe pick up a little bug spray or something else.
So a commercial organization is purchasing?
Oh, yeah.
And they're gonna do something?
Yeah, they've already got it. If they've submitted permits, they're certainly public, and they're in the, they would be in the community development office.
Hopefully they'll allow people to continue to park there during the festivals, because that's not the few parking places.
Well, they have been very helpful in the festivals, in the one we just had, and that ain't problem.
All right, thank you. And just a general comment, I'm sure you've heard this before, but the last event I was down there for, I'm trying to put my brain together. I'm sorry, it wasn't 4th of July, it was a couple of days behind that.
Cumberland.
It may have been the Cumberland Island one, but the general comment was, and I know you've heard it before, I've heard it before, is that, oh no, it was the fishing tournament, that time, was that the, that wasn't the 24th, was it?
End of May.
No, the 24th.
Anyway, it had to do around the fishing tournament, a lot of boats, a lot of people interested in it, there was a particular guy and his family that was concerned, because this happened before, where he had to put the parker's trailer, parker's boat, and there were, you know, food trucks, and just taking up slots that are designed for that.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you've heard it before regarding the North River boat ramp.
Meeting Street?
The Meeting Street, right, yeah, and that quickly fills up on these events, so. I don't have a question, I just wanted to share that comment that, you know, they need to do something better about where I can put my boat trailer, so that was just kind of, I'm sure a lot of you heard it.
Well, there's plans being discussed to put a double-deck parking garage down.
You started a rumor.
Just kidding.
Be another project.
Willoughby.
Council.
Yeah, I'd make a comment in response to Donna Asphalt's concern. The RSVP plan identified many things, and I know the CDB's doing some with them, the DEA's taken on several of those, and they've finished several of those. If you go down the park, you'll see some signs that are more inviting than the old, don't do this, don't do that, so forth. They took care of those signs, and another thing is if you go down and look at the kiosks, now at the boat ramp, you'll see a new type of kiosk, and it's going to be a map, be the centerpiece of that. It's being done right now to identify all the restaurants and other things as people come walking from the parking lot to go to the, that being the ferry parking lot, to go to Cumberland Island National Seashore parking lot over to the ferry. They'll be able to see this, and hopefully that will tell you something to stay there. There's also a time clock that's going to be down there very quickly, right there at the entrance to the park, which will brighten up that area. So there are several things that are happening. The DEA right now uses that RSVP plan that was put together. It's been 6 months, and they pulled several things out of that, and it's taken and put the fourth plan together for next year, and it's going to take on some more of those issues. So those are working, and it's all in an effort to bring more people downtown. These are things that the folks have identified with the RSVP team spent, I think it was 6 months, working and coming up with what I think is a really great plan to brighten up downtown. And now with respect to what's going to happen with 319, they're right now thinking about a way to advertise on some boat, or one of the large signs out there.
Billboard.
Billboard, thank you. Couldn't get this one out.
So anyway, it's gonna advertise what it's gonna look like when it's done, because we know as we go through it, it's gonna be some issues for the downtown area. So there's things like that that are happening, and that's one of the groups that are involved in trying to help make the downtown more active, along with what you all do in the CDP. I know that you were part of that. I come to many of those meetings as well. So I share that together, so.
Quick question for you, since we're on it. Another Rustapalooza, does anybody know?
Yeah, that's coming.
That's in November, right?
Yeah, they're one in November 11th.
Yeah.
No, that might not be the date, but I think it's, for some reason, I think it's 11th.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Same size, you think?
No.
Two places?
Yeah.
No, they're only just gonna, they're.
One day.
They're only gonna use the one on the one day. They're gonna use Gilman's site. They're not planning on using the Orange Bowl site, because there are a lot more events going on at that time, and feel it'll be much more effective, at least from what I heard from the meetings I attended, if they just at this time use the Gilman site, and then when they come back in for the next one in March, they'll be using both sites again. So it's a single site, as I understand it, and then it'll be a double site again in March.
March, thank you, right now. That affects the exactly, so. But you're right, that's what it is.
Well, other than the fact that it was 99 degrees on the car thermometer yesterday or the day before, caught me off guard. And I think we were very fortunate. I don't think we had any serious health-related problems with the fourth.
No, actually, the fourth went very well.
Yeah. And thanks to everybody, especially all of them. The merchants and the exhibitors, and
I got a little.
Kiwanis and all that. I think everybody that made it happen.
This is kind of funny, I guess, but not to the vendor. We had a vendor that was selling windows, new windows, and he had a bowling ball. And he would take the bowling ball back like this and swing it against the window and show how tough the windows were. Except one time it wasn't really too tough.
It was everywhere.
You could only hit it with a bowling ball so many times. A little bit of depression and depression
Well, I want to thank everyone for being here, and I'd like to close this quarterly kind of meeting for City of St. Mary's, Georgia for July 6th, 2017. Thank you all for your input.